Let's take our consciousness off of food and drink as best we can. And we'll use three breaths to do the flushing. Flush those thoughts from our body with three breaths. And with a deep in breath, Shanti, Shanti, Shanti. Our study of Satchidananda and the Bhagavad Gita encompasses many things, including a study or attention to our consciousness, and also to practices and many other things, which we'll get to. So we know that the word conscious refers to the difference between being present and being unconscious. Consciousness. And consciousness has another meaning for us as well, doesn't it? Consciousness being how we are in the world, how we receive things in the world, how our mind evaluates, judges, and deals with things in the world. Is that right? Anyone here not have consciousness? We all have consciousness. So there's consciousness. As we learned in the church service today, we also have faith. Faith. We have faith. What for you is the difference between consciousness and faith?
Faith seems to be an action, whereas consciousness seems to be, to me, awareness.
Consciousness is awareness, and faith is has more to do with action. Is that what I'm hearing you saying?
Yes.
Good. Anything else?
I would probably agree with that. It's it's a quality of consciousness.
A quality of consciousness.
I think, yeah. I mean, I think awareness just is. So, you know, it's like you were saying, it's a sort of faith, or for me, it's trust.
Trust.
Yeah. It's an addition to consciousness in the sense of an additional quality of it, aspect of it.
So faith is additional quality or aspect to consciousness? Uh-huh.
I think.
That's not consciousness, but different?
Well, it's a way of describing an aspect of it, maybe. When I think of an addition, I don't know, it separates it. So
you're saying perhaps faith is an aspect of consciousness.
Can be.
Can be an aspect of consciousness. We have Well, what we think is what we're here to examine.
Right.
So by expressing what we think, we open our thoughts up for ourselves to hear, so we can go a little deeper. For me, faith and consciousness are the same insofar as they reflect the totality of how we look at the world, our expectations, beliefs, how we receive the world, with one particular difference, and that is faith also has this aspect of there is a set of faith principles or belief that we hear about, which we perhaps haven't yet incorporated into our consciousness. And by going to spiritual centers such as this, we learn about those other aspects of consciousness, which we call faith, and we want to head towards or we're drawn to, but don't yet seem to be fully incorporated in our consciousness.
Maybe it's a focus. It's like where you turn your awareness.
Yes. And that is consciousness. Do we turn our consciousness towards what faith teaches us? Or do we allow our consciousness to grind along with the reactionary and our inherited nature? We have an inherited instinctual nature. And then we, through our nurture, have developed sets of ideas and thoughts and beliefs that support us. And then we learn there's faith, and we get some new ideas that we are attracted to, but maybe are not yet part of our consciousness. And we somehow yearn to have them be more of our consciousness. The Bhagavad Gita addresses this. We've learned that the setting of the Bhagavad Gita is a crisis in an individual's life. Whose life? Your life. Your life. Represented by Prince Arjuna, the warrior king, who asks his charioteer to drive the chariot between the two warring armies with the noise and racket about ready to fight. In those days, you could do that because if the armies weren't too close to you, they couldn't hurt you yet. So they were standing apart. And in that instance, Prince Arjuna suffered a crisis of confidence. He didn't know what to do. He couldn't bring himself to fight and kill his friends, his teachers, his uncles, his relations. And yet, in this scenario, as it's drawn out, the opposing army are all bad. They don't have any good qualities whatsoever about them. It's a metaphor. And his army are all good, have all wonderful qualities. And it's a metaphor. People aren't actually like that. But in this metaphor, that's how it's set up. So even all those guys over there, the bad guys, some are his teachers and his uncles. And he doesn't want to go into war and kill them. It doesn't seem right. It seems like he'll be damned to hell. And on the other hand, he was brought up with a great sense of duty. What is his to do? And what is or was his to do was be the leader. He was the general. His job was to lead, just like generals do today, and set an example, a moral example, physical example, a spiritual example for people following him. So he was drawn. And the way the Bhagavad Gita sets it up, he tries to figure it out in his head. And he figures and figures and figures and figures, and he can't get it figured out. So he turns to his charioteer, who happens to be God, who is showing up in the incarnation of Lord Krishna, and he says, "I give up. I surrender." How often have we, in great challenges, trying to figure out what is ours to do, have gotten to that point where we say, I can't figure it out, I surrender to God, and I'm going to let Spirit be in charge. I give up. An example for us, what might happen if we were to have the consciousness and the faith to give it to God. Giving it to God is perhaps for some an article of faith, may not be in everyone's consciousness yet. But for those who have incorporated that very common article of faith into their consciousness, as Arjuna shows us in this example, he was willing to give it to God. He said, I give up. Guide me. I am your student, your servant. I follow you. I give up. Threw down his bow, had a name, Gandiva, giant bow that always was victorious. Threw it on the ground and kneeled in front of his spiritual teacher. And this is all happening in an instant. And the whole Bhagavad Gita then expands and flows out in that instant of time, which is beyond time. Arjuna asked Krishna, what should I do? And Krishna, the Lord, knew that was the wrong question. Not the right question. He didn't answer that question. Rather, and this is what the second chapter of the Bhagavad Gita is all about. First chapter sets up the story. All the funny names, Indian names. Second chapter is Lord Krishna's response to this crisis. Question was, what should I do? And Holy Spirit knew that was the wrong question. The right question was, what is it that I'm not knowing that I ought to know? What is it that I'm not seeing that I need to see? And that arena is consciousness, including the faith aspect of consciousness. Therefore, Lord Krishna talks to Arjuna about consciousness, which sounds a lot like philosophy. This poor guy who's on his knees wanting some help, and the Lord talks about consciousness, philosophy, which might seem sort of strange, yet on a deep level, that's what truly is missing in Arjuna's consciousness and worldview, including his faith. He's not able to look at the world with an enlightened consciousness. Any advice by Lord Krishna what to do would go into a faulty consciousness and not be properly received. Not work. The first step is for Lord Krishna to begin to alter the consciousness of Arjuna. Now I'm going to flip to something else here. Let's see if I can do it. Yeah. The five basic principles of unity, in a way, do the same thing, it occurred to me, but from a different point of view. Let's just look at them. Let's look at these in terms of consciousness and what to do. The first one is God is the only true presence and power in the universe. Is this telling us what to do? No. It's rather something that we're asked to have faith in. When we do have faith in that, it's part of our consciousness. God is the only true presence and power in the universe. which in terms of the Bhagavad Gita does not exclude Lord Krishna coming down as an incarnation of that God to speak to us. Because this God, who is the only presence and the power, well, he doesn't have a mouth or a nose or ears, because God is something else. Perhaps a God-infused person shows up as a teacher, and we've had teachers over the generations. Jesus is one of our teachers. So philosophy, consciousness, too. We are individualized expressions of God. Our divine potential and spiritual essence are called Christ. Is that telling him what to do? No. It's another aspect of consciousness. Are we conscious right now of some divine aspect of ourselves? If we are, where is it? Is it in a spot, a speck within us, and then there's the rest of us? This is consciousness we're talking about, and faith. I propose these questions so that you can look yourself to see what your own consciousness is. We are individualized expressions of God. Does that include all of us, all our physical parts, not just a spot here? We are individualized expressions of God. Does that include our consciousness? Everything, the way we see the world, as being an expression of God. Not telling us what to do, giving us a way of looking at the world. We create our reality through the thoughts we hold in consciousness. Is this advice on what to do? No. It's consciousness, isn't it? We create our reality through the thoughts we hold in consciousness, which allows us to perhaps step back from our own minds and look to see what's going on. It allows us perhaps to include in the universe of things, here's a thing, a table, here's a thing, a cup of coffee, here's some things sitting in the room, and we have other things which are more esoteric, like fidelity and love, different things. Those are all things. Can we also hold thoughts as being things and be aware of the thought things, just as we're aware of this coffee cup thing, or that person's thing. So that we can step back from our own minds and thus understand everything. And when we look at our thoughts as things, perhaps that gives us the insight that we can change those things, which we call thoughts, in our minds. And yet, do we do that? Is this a self-licking ice cream cone? How do we? What's the basis for changing those thoughts? Perhaps it has something to do with this consciousness and our faith direction that we have resolved to follow. We become aware of our oneness with God through prayer and meditation. All right, so here's chapter 3 of the Bhagavad Gita. We just wanted to know what to do, God. You gave us this philosophy, but what do we do? We're in the middle of this battle. In our 5 basic principles, there's one very important thing to do. As we'll see in the Bhagavad Gita, there are various things to do to explore our unity with the divine. And one of the most important in the Bhagavad Gita, and of course in our principles, is prayer and meditation. And there are others which the Gita explores wonderfully, giving us other things to do to help us as we realize the faith that we are headed towards. And finally, we must put spiritual truth into practice in order to change our lives. So this is the spur. This is the spur. This is the final doing thing. Okay, you've prayed and you've meditated and it's come to you, divine light has shined forth and you've seen what it's yours to do, but your mind steps in and says, well, maybe tomorrow. I'm not ready for this. It's a great idea I had, but that was when I was all by myself, not out there in the rough and tumble of the world. Our fifth principle says, you must resolve to put that spiritual truth which came to you through your expanded consciousness and expanded faith, you must put it into practice in order to follow your spiritual path, to expand in your spiritual path, which is the change you wish to see in your life. We're going to study the Bhagavad Gita, which has this very same progression. With questions? Satchidananda, the Bhagavad Gita. Okay. Let's see here. In chapter 2, here's a particular recommendation that Lord Krishna gives to Arjuna when he's down on his knees begging for some advice. Particular recommendation or expansion of consciousness that I have been reading, and I've committed this to memory for the most part because I haven't been able to get down to the bottom of it. I mean, we discussed it here before. Let's look at it again. Lord Krishna says to Arjuna, you are grieving for those who should not be grieved for. Remember, he's up there In grief. I thought it was interesting. Rev Russ talked about grief today, you remember? Today's the day he grieves for his sister who died near Christmas. My mind just jumps around like that. And here the spiritual advice is, you are grieving for those who should not be grieved for, while uttering would-be words of wisdom. Would-be words of wisdom on all the explanations and the complaints and the fears and the what will people think. All that. The wise grieve neither for the living nor the dead. This is the verse I've set to memory. The wise grieve neither for the living nor the dead. What does it mean to grieve for the living?
Can I make a comment?
Yes.
It's interesting. Wouldn't you say your interpretation is of while uttering would be words of wisdom? What do you think it is?
We have learned that a true source of wisdom is that divine essence within us, which Rumi calls the second intelligence, other intelligence. We also refer to it as the divine spirit and so on, our true source of wisdom. The other attribute of human beings is a repository of knowledge and habits and learning, which we've learned in school from our friends, our parents, and from experience. And as experiences show up, we make decisions, okay? Don't put your finger in the fire, it burns. So we've learned habits, look both ways before crossing the street. Those are all things which I wouldn't call wisdom, I would call knowledge. in our knowledge base. And when we use that knowledge base and call it wisdom, it's a would-be source of wisdom. True knowledge, we've learned, comes from, we heard this in the this morning in the Daily Word when you were talking about what is our true source of wisdom. Some other place, not up here. True source of wisdom.
Okay, I understand that. I think also that when we utter those would-be words of wisdom, very often they're part of the motivation for uttering them is to make us feel like we're helping or fixing. You know,
it's here. All up here.
It's all up here,
mm-hmm.
But I'm saying the motivation is also to make us feel better.
Yes.
In the face of grief. You know?
Make us feel better. Up here also is the repository of desires, cravings, wanting things to turn out a particular way, expectations, assumptions, aversions. That's all up here. What is down here flows out like a spring from a spring box. And according to our fifth principle, ours is to recognize it and follow that guidance, which is without desire to feel better or manipulation, and so on.
Okay,
make sense? The wise grieve. What does it mean to grieve for the living?
People who are in disasters. You know, back to me, you know, if you see somebody in a total mess, falling apart in a disaster, grieving, feeling bad for them, again, wanting to help.
Someone is not like they used to be, perhaps. Someone is ill.
Addiction.
Has an addiction they didn't have before and now they do.
Right.
And we grieve for that person, right? What's other examples of grieving for the living?
Having our expectations for other persons not to happen.
They're not turning out the way I hoped.
Right.
The way I wish. They're not turning out that way. And Lord Krishna here also includes the dead. The wise grieve not for the dead either. He takes it a level deeper. Level deeper. This is all philosophy, isn't it? And a matter of faith. Where is he heading with this? Did God in our consciousness create the world perfectly as it is? Are those people who haven't turned out the way we hoped, expect, wish, are they perfect in God's eye, and can we see them through God's eye rather than through our wishes and desires and aversions? Lord Krishna has to instruct Arjuna in his consciousness before telling him what to do is going to make any sense. And we all know that when we get these faith ideas, the ways we should believe, it's not going to happen in a few instants on a battlefield. It's going to take a time of commitment and struggle to taking whatever spiritual messages we hear that somehow attract us. Somehow we want to get underneath and allowing our lives to expand with those in mind and begin to see life anew perhaps through these spiritual principles and see if that's the way we are led, being led.
When I see the wise grieve neither for the living nor the dead, I don't know, at this point, the way I take it is God sees the whole picture. It's above my pay grade.
Yes.
You know, so and I can help, but I can't, the results aren't mine to control or, you know, project. It's like my vision's limited, so do what you can, you know, do what you can and let go of the results, sort of.
It's part of what I hear your spiritual path is to let go of certain aspects of the I consciousness. It's not I, me, or mine, really. Some willingness to let go and let God.
Yeah.
And follow a deeper understanding of things, showing up exactly as they ought to. And rather questioning, why, God, did you do this to me? Coming, which is from the head, coming at it from a different place. As Rev Russ talked about in his sermon today, what is the good here that I'm not seeing? What is the good here that I'm not seeing?
And the thing is, I may not see any good. You know, and the thing is, you know, it's the whole idea of letting go of the results, and the results might not be seen while I'm around. Do you know what I mean? I may never see the good. Just because maybe physically I'll be out of the picture, whatever.
Yes, and seeing the good as a result, an anticipation, an assumption.
Right.
The consciousness is to look for the good, to be open for the good. Whether you experience the good is here nor there. Rather, am I going to adjust my consciousness, follow my faith, and be open for the good?
Yeah.
Look for it. I may not see it, but I'm letting God be in charge of that. I'm just open for it.
Yeah, that for me, it goes back to the trust thing.
Trust. Yeah. Trust. And this is what Arjuna did with Lord Krishna. He said, I trust you. I trust you, I will follow you. And that's spiritual example for us. Are we willing to trust that divine essence, which we're told is a part of us, and to look for it, and be open for it? And notice when our heads try and give us another message, that's great, that's my mind's job, it's doing a good job, and my resolution is not to take it too seriously.
You know, I'm thinking about taking this coaching for transformation course. And, you know, in when I see somebody in pain or I want to fix them, I realize that I'm trying to fix myself and I don't know how to do it. Do you see what I'm saying?
Yeah, so when you see someone in pain, you have a desire to fix them. And you have noticed, I'm hearing you say, it has more to do with fixing yourself than fixing them.
A sense of control over something, you know?
Yeah. So when I become aware of that, that's when the spiritual essence is coming through. And I stop and I just simply listen. And oftentimes the other person just needs to be heard, not suggestions or recommendations.
Is this person in the perfect place today? Everything that's going on, aside from my judgments and my feelings of pain for the pain or something, are they in the perfect place for them right now, even in suffering? And can I look to see what's mine to do, which perhaps is to listen, whatever. And not be focused on how this is affecting me. I'd rather give myself totally. Good observation, Sam. The difference between the permanent and impermanent, the real and the unreal. This is more philosophy. More philosophy. More to do with how we desire to shape our consciousness. I'll go over these as suggestions to us to see if they ring an impulse to reshape our consciousness. Run through them. As the senses contact the objects of the senses, feelings of heat and cold, pain and pleasure occur, Arjuna. These sensations come and go, they're impermanent. Patiently endure them, great prince. These sensations come and go. Pain, pleasure, not only pain and pleasure personally, but experience in others. Patiently endure them. Doesn't mean we don't do what it's ours to do, yes. But at the same time, can we deal with the most vital matters by letting events take their course? And we may be part of that series of events. In fact, that person who is not tossed about by sense experiences and always stays balanced in pain and pleasure is fit to experience immortality. In other words, is preparing for a deeper experience of enlightenment on one's spiritual path. Not tossed about and stays balanced, stays at peace in pain and pleasure. What is not has never been. What is always is. The truth about the real and the unreal has been realized by the seers. What is not, isn't. What is, always is. Let's look a little deeper.
What does it mean by seers?
Wise men. Men. Sages. Gurus. Great teachers. Jesus. Seers. Know that all this vast universe is pervaded by that which is indestructible. This vast universe is pervaded by that which is indestructible, permanent. No one can destroy what is everlasting and imperishable. This is meant to disrupt our thinking. Most of the things that come to mind. We talked about things earlier. Things, cups, people, love, thoughts, things. Come and go. Now this verse tells us, know that all this vast universe is pervaded by that which is indestructible. No one can destroy what is everlasting and imperishable. The verse invites us to open ourselves up to this. It doesn't tell us what that is. Open ourselves up. The indwelling one, capital O, one, is eternal, indestructible and immeasurable. The bodies of the indwelling one are impermanent. So here's more information about that which is indestructible and immeasurable and permanent. We've just given it a name, capital O-1. Indwelling, implying that some aspect that we can discover by looking inward. It's more information about that. Vyāra Paramita, therefore, Arjuna, whoever thinks that Atman, that one, eternal, immeasurable one, or we could call it the capital S self, whoever thinks the Atman or the self does the killing or can be killed misunderstands. That self doesn't kill, nor is it ever killed. Applying there some kappa one that exists among other places within us that can never be killed. We call it the soul, don't we? And doesn't do the killing. That's enough for today. I have some commentary on these verses, and perhaps we'll address that next time.
Thank you.
Any questions or comments before we close today?
I'm just appreciating the self-awareness that this class opens up. Appreciating learning and growth.
Thank you. Let's use the sound of Om to take us deep into that self-awareness. And let's use our breath to flush the thoughts from our body. Bring us to peace. We'll do that with three breaths. And with a deep in breath.
Thank you.
Thank you.